This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Don Cinco. Don is the Chief Integrity Officer at Cleveland Clinic. Excited to talk to Don about what he does, the role of a Chief Integrity Officer, and more. Don, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. Again, I'm Chief Integrity Officer at Cleveland Clinic. I have a pretty diverse background. I'm a CPA by background and worked at Ernst & Young out of college in their audit practice, primarily working on hospitals and SEC companies. Went on to Eaton Corporation, was their worldwide head of internal audit for a number of years. Got to go around the world a few times in that position before coming to the clinic just over 20 years ago. Was the head of internal audit. I started that way, and then it was about 15 years ago that I was named to this new position called Chief Integrity Officer.
And what the role of Chief Integrity Officer, does that encompass accounting integrity, such as related to audit functions, make sure things are accurate and correct and true, or is it much broader than that today? Tell us a bit more about the role.
Yeah, it's very broad. The way it started is, again, I was the head of internal audit, so I'm basically doing the internal audit functions for the enterprise. And then about 15 years ago, the board audit committee came to me and said they wanted to create this new position and called Chief Integrity Officer, and it'd be an enterprise-wide position. They wanted to put it into C-suite, and it would be over the offices of internal audit and corporate compliance and business ethics. And the thought process was that the mission statements of internal audit and corporate compliance are very similar. I mean, internal audit's the third line of defense, so to speak, independent of operations and the like, sets its own auditing and monitoring programs. Then you have corporate compliance, which is, it's not independent, it's objective, because it can be involved in writing policies and procedures and the like. But the mission is still similar in, are we doing the right things? Are we following federal, state, local laws, regulations, policies, procedures, business ethics? And so they created this position to kind of be over that. And it's really, all-encompassing. So it's not just financial. Matter of fact, the financial side is just a small piece of it. We look at all aspects over medical operations, other non-medical operations, and the like.
And talk about, do other systems have a similar role, or what do they call this role? I don't hear very many systems using the term Chief Integrity Officer, though it makes great sense. Unique to Cleveland Clinic, or other systems have it as well?
Well, I'll tell you, 15 years ago, we didn't know anybody else that was doing it at the time. And since then, there's a number of organizations. I could probably count 15 health systems that have adopted our model. And as a matter of fact, some of them, I know they adopted the model because we were contacted by their senior management and asking for copies of our organization charts and the like and how we're set up. Some places they don't use the word integrity officer. They'll say they're vice president of audit and compliance. You'll see a number of those. So they have the same kind of a function, but with a different title. But now, I would say there's probably at least 15 in healthcare, if not more.
And take a moment on, obviously in the accounting world, you periodically see different scandals, different billing issues, different things. In the Chief Integrity Officer issue role, you see the broad stream of everything. What are some of the more interesting things that you see that you come across in the role that you have?
Yeah, it is interesting. And a lot of things cross through finance. When you think about organizations, a lot of people want to get a better idea of what's happening financially because basically everything goes through that. So even a lot of the compliance issues kind of come through finance. So it's really helpful that, being a CPA in that background is pretty helpful. But when you look at the issues, there's the basic issues that everybody has to deal with, billing and privacy and all that. But what I think that's interesting that's happening now is things like robotics. So lots of organizations have gone into the use of robotics, and particularly when it hits healthcare, is you look at what insurance companies are doing. So insurance companies are beginning to use robotics to deny payments. So they're having robots go through and look at bills and systematically deny charges that they feel are not billable. And the problem with that, so that's a financial issue, but it's also a compliance issue. It's a billing compliance issue. And the problem with that is, you know, hospitals have hundreds of insurance contracts, if not thousands. And, you know, there's no standard contract that says we pay for this or we don't pay for that. So one of the big things that we're dealing with is looking at what they're doing with the use of robotics. And we're finding just at the clinic tens of millions of dollars of valid claims that are denied because the robotics are set up incorrectly. So from an audit standpoint, you know, even internal use of robotics, you know, what you learn is robotics is great if they're set up correctly. If the data within it is set up correctly, then you get a good answer. But it's like the old, what we used to say with computers, where garbage in, garbage out. If the robotics are set up wrong, well, then the answers are wrong. And so we're starting to see the use of that being a compliance issue, a billing compliance issue, obviously, as well as a big financial issue. That's a big national issue across hospitals in general. The other thing is,
sure. So if it's calibrated too tight, if it's calibrated to sort of deny, you know, at a higher level than it should, then you end up in a spot where you're, you know, the amount of effort spent to fight stuff and go through stuff is got to be brutal.
Oh, it is. And it involves lots of people. You know, we're having to bring people in and show them, you know, here are things being denied. Here's the contract. The contract pays for it, but it's being denied. It takes lots of time. You know, so it's, you know, so something like that, that's like totally different that, you know, that 2 years ago, you wouldn't even have, it wasn't even an issue. And today it's a big national problem.
Right. And in the old days or just a couple of years ago, it was people told to deny stuff a little bit more. So they calibrated a little bit harder, made it a little bit harder. But now when it becomes automated, it doesn't impact a small number of claims, it impacts a huge number of claims, and so it really slows down getting paid.
Oh, it's huge, and it's a huge national issue, and the more automation that is, just as you said, Scott, the more things are automated, it's the bigger the problem can get because it happens faster and more frequently. So things like that, and see, a lot of organizations aren't looking at that, and you have to feel for the small hospitals who don't have, you know, an integrity office like we do, who can look into these things and challenge these things. You know, the smaller players, you know, don't have the resources to do it. And, you know, and the thing is, what I've always said about it being in compliance or integrity, you know, we want to make sure that we're paid correctly. We don't want to get paid more than we should, but we don't want to get paid less than we should. So the integrity office is like, okay, we want to make sure the payment is correct. And I think that's kind of the, you know, I think what everybody would like.
It's much like paying your taxes. You don't want to pay more than you should. You don't want to pay less than you should. You want to pay accurately. And you make this point about what systems have, not just you, but they've got the systems, the staff, the team to fight these things. Small systems find themselves at a huge disadvantage. It really is David versus Goliath when the small system or the individual office is trying to fight back to get paid by one of the huge payers.
Yeah, I mean, things could be happening to them that they don't know because they don't have the resources to look at it and check it and it's difficult even with the resources. But there's things like that. So that's, to me, is really interesting because it's a changing dynamic in the industry with robotics and not only how we use them internally to improve processes, but then what's happening, you know, to us as well. I think the other thing that's really interesting, that's really evolving, is where regulation conflicts with caring for patients. And then, you know, this has always been an issue, but it's really interesting under COVID-19 how it continues to evolve. And what I mean by that is, you know, most doctors, you know, they care for patients. They want to do the right thing. They want to make, you know, sure people are, you know, cared for. In a Cleveland Clinic, you know, we're a physician-led organization. So, you know, doctors run this place. and you really feel it here, where caring for the patient's important. We're not run by business people and the like. And so what happens is you often have situations where doctors are trying to do the right things, but may collide with a regulation that doesn't provide for it. And a really big example that's just happened, obviously, in the last 5 months is telehealth, telemedicine. So people have wanted to be able to treat patients, care for patients, via telemedicine, for a long time. But, insurance companies, Medicare and the like, wouldn't reimburse for those because, the reimbursement models are not set up for being able to care for patients, via laptop or via iPhone. Well, what happens is all of a sudden now we have COVID, everybody's working remotely. Everybody loves telemedicine. It's being used in huge quantities. And now the question is, well, are we going to have to revert back to not being able to use it because regulations, had to be waivers in order to be able to do it. So there's lots of examples of those kinds of things where things that are really good to do are great for caring for patients. Regulations, though, are always kind of behind, things. And so I think that's always interesting. There's a number of those kinds of things as well.
No, fascinating. I mean, those things, there was a specific CMS waiver to allow telehealth to be billed and paid for, reimbursed, in a 90-day waiver, and it's been re-upped, I think, but it's a matter of how long it stays re-upped, and it's a huge deal because everybody prefers it. It's everybody wants it, and now systems and doctors have gotten used to it as well, where they might have been a little bit slower to take to it, but now patients and physicians, everybody wants it. Fascinating.
And there's a number of those things, but it's interesting how where regulation didn't allow for caring for the patient in that manner. And now when everybody sees the benefit, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But another compliance-related issue is there's a number of waivers that have occurred, compliance waivers that have, and billing waivers that have occurred because of COVID. And, at some point those waivers are going to run out. And we have to make sure as an organization that when those waivers run out, that people properly revert back to the pre-waiver scenario.
Right. So you're not inadvertently continuing to do tons of things that you can no longer bill for or get paid for, even though you want to do it that way. And it'll be fascinating to see at the CMS level whether it stays. And just as interesting, whether the commercial payers continue to honor it, because commercial has always had the concern that would make it easier to bill or easier to increase the amount of payments. And thus there's different, even though it makes great sense, there's different disincentives to it from a payer perspective.
So those are just a couple of the things that are, to me, interesting and that really impact the compliance department and obviously internal audit that are kind of different, but you have to, it's not the typical, billing issue and privacy issues that, that we obviously always continually work on, but we have to stay ahead of.
And each of those can have huge revenue and financial impacts on the system. I mean, a slight tick down in the ability to do telehealth visits without being replaced with physical visits can have a huge impact.
Oh.
A slight uptick in denials, even, 5% impact in denials has a huge financial impact on the system.
Oh, significant. I mean, we were talking, tens of millions of dollars, minimum. And just in any one of these things. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, the world, the integrity office world is an interesting point right now.
So did you ever think when you started your role at EY that you'd ever have this interesting a role 20, 30 years later? Did you ever look at it was that even beyond the pale of imagination that you'd be at, probably, always ranked as one of the top 1 to 2 to 3 health systems in the world, Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, a couple others.
Yep.
And at a role that you have, did you ever even begin to envision this as a young person at EY that this is where your career would take you?
Well, it's interesting because I do a lot of mentoring, and one of the things I always tell people is you always hear in college and you always hear coming out of, you know, setting your course and having your plans and what are you going to be in 5 years and this is what I'm going to do. You know, and the reality is there's a number of things that happen in everyone's career that totally change, you know, kind of what you thought was going to be happening. Because I came out of college, I wanted to be a CPA and I wanted to work for Ernst & Young and, you know, this is what I wanted to do. But, you know, the reality is most people are in jobs today that the jobs didn't even exist 5 years ago or 10 years ago. And to your point, at no time do you think that, wow, because again, this role didn't even exist, you know, 15 years ago. That such an exciting role, and again, as you point out, a great place. I mean, the clinic is just phenomenal. It really is an amazing facility, you know, physician leadership and the like. And to be able to work in a very ethical environment, because being doctor led and the doctors really, really are, you know, straight up ethical people. It really, you're right. It was an amazing journey to get from where I started to where this is. And it's, and I'll say this from a career standpoint, it's fun. It's fun to work on complex things. It's fun to resolve complex situations. And you know, you're right. I mean, who would have guessed?
Right. No, Don, and talk about this for a moment. So there's all these studies that show that if you plan, if you set goals and plan, you are far likely to be successful in life, professionally, et cetera, than if you don't. But how do you adjust that with the fact that you made this fascinating point that, look, half the jobs that people have today didn't exist, you know, X years ago. You know, I look at, you know, I spend a huge amount of my time doing podcasts. Grace, who's our producer, who's with us today, does a huge amount of time producing podcasts. This wasn't even a thing 3 to 5 years ago. So how do you both plan? Just as an example, how do you plan and keep an open mind? How do you sort of plan for a career and keep it open? What advice do you give to your kids if you have kids? What advice do you give to young people?
Well, I do. Well, I have three. I have three children who now they're in their 30s and they're all very successful in the business world right now. But a couple things. One, what I tell them is, I think this is above everything from a success standpoint is. You know, is to do the right thing and be ethical. And this is just a piece of advice I just gave our new interns here. I said that, you know, in your career, you're going to have many opportunities to do the wrong thing. Things are going to happen. Opportunities are going to present themselves where you could take the wrong path. I said, don't ever do that. I said, sometimes it might set you back. You may think, you know, that it, you know, that it'll hurt you, but I said, don't ever do that. You know, be able to look back 40 years and say, you know what, I've never done anything that, you know, people can look back and say, you know, whatever, or that you're going to get into trouble or whatever. But I think to your point, what I've always done, and again, it may be too idealistic for most, but I've always said, if you continually to try to do your best, and this is the thing, and I say this jokingly, but it's true, is I think if you always try to make other people look good, particularly the people you work for, if your job, I always say my job is to make other people look better or, you know, or whatever. And everybody wants somebody working for them who their job makes them look better. And if you've always worked hard and you've tried to do that, people want you. I almost feel like the way that the transition from external law to this position, if you're doing a good job and you're working hard and you're showing people value and you're doing things that are helping the organization, whatever, people are going to want that. They're going to want to grow that. People want those kind of people working for them. And again, sounds very idealistic, but I think if you look for anybody listening says, you know, wouldn't you want the people working for you, working, you know, for the organization or for you personally to look better? And opportunities come and you never know where they're going to be. It's kind of like the old, you know, whatever they say, luck is, you know, working hard and, you know, waiting for the right opportunity to show up because you never know when they're going to show up. Things continually change. It is interesting though, but I think if you're always trying to do the right thing, you're trying to work hard, help people, you know, I mean, if you look at the integrity officer, look at any compliance officer, you know, we have no authority to do anything. our job, we have to get things done through influence. And, you know, and the way you influence is being able to develop relationships with people, know that your agenda is to do the right thing and to help the organization, to help them, and that's how you're able to do it. You know, not having what I call a hidden agenda.
I think fantastic, and thank you, Don. I think that you're right on. If you do the right thing, if you keep an open mind, if you try and help people, it's sort of the concept of making yourself indispensable, and you're constantly acting in a highly ethical way, you know, good opportunities tend to exist. They tend to show up because you become indispensable to people, and people want you around. They want you helping. They want you leading. So great advice.
And if it doesn't work out in that particular organization or whatever, you have probably more opportunities someplace else because they'll know about you. They'll know about your reputation and they'll want to get you. So, because it doesn't always work, but to me, that's the best path.
That's fantastic. Don, I want to thank you for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast, the Chief Integrity Officer at Cleveland Clinic. Magnificent role. Great what you do. Thank you for joining us today. Really informative.
Thanks, Scott.